Welcome to the Monkbend, a CPG community chat. The Monkbend will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, all of which have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Welcome to episode 9 of the month end. Guest today is Ibrahim Brasier of A Dozen Cousins. How are you doing today, Ibrahim?
I'm good. How are you feeling, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well for a Wednesday and really looking forward to this chat here. So excited to chat about A Dozen Cousins and kind of where you're coming from or how you've grown or managed your business the last kind of several years since it's been in the space. So before we get started, let's get a little background on A Dozen Cousins and what you're selling and why you started it and how long it's been around. Just kind of give us the high level there so the guests or the listeners of the podcast kind of know where you're coming from.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for the introduction. You know, my name, as you mentioned, Ibrahim Brasier. I'm from Brooklyn originally, and I grew up in a really big family. So I have 9 siblings, 11 nieces and nephews. And then when my daughter was born, she was the 12th cousin, which is where the brand gets its name from and why I always, you know, start there. But I grew up, I've been a food lover really my entire life. You know, when we were kids, food was kind of the way that we stayed connected with each other, that we showed each other love. Fast forward many years, I started my career in the food industry working for kind of big CPG companies. And during that time, I slowly went on this journey of learning more about healthy eating, you know, better for you ingredients, sourcing, and reached a point where, you know, eventually I was like really locked into that part of the world, but was feeling this interesting like dichotomy between the way I was thinking about food at work, which was focused on like health and wellness and the environment. And then the way I would think about food when I was with my family and friends, which was a lot more about culture and joy and taste. And so the whole idea behind A Dozen Cousins was to try to bring those two worlds together. You know, I wanted to create a brand that felt really cultural and really authentic, but at the same time, leverage everything that I had been learning about sourcing and innovation and things of that nature. So we launched the business in January of 2019 with a line of ready-to-eat beans. We sell kind of pouch side dishes that are all fully cooked and seasoned. You just warm them and enjoy. And so, you know, we chose beans really for two reasons. The first is that they combine taste, health, and culture in a really unique way. So going back to what I mentioned about why we started the company, we wanted to find a food that was healthy, but also that tasted really good and had some cultural significance, which I think beans do. And then the second reason, which, you know, the world has changed with COVID, but when we started, the bean category was not sexy at all, right? It was very kind of big, slow growth, kind of sleepy category. And I was very excited by that. You know, post-COVID, of course, people have been reawakened to the value of beans and have been eating them a lot more over the last year, but still felt like that was a really cool opportunity to bring innovation to the category. So I'll pause there for a moment, but that's kind of us in a nutshell.
That's a great background. yes, let's make beans exciting today, right? That's the whole goal here. But how did you, you know, you mentioned you came from, you know, like some of the folks we talked to in the podcast come from a completely different world and like have a passion to get into the CPG space or want to create it. Like what, I guess, from your experience in the big CPG world or the corporate world, what are the couple of things that you've taken into this kind of, you know, the you being a founder and growing this brand from nothing? Like, are there a couple of kind of key takeaways from, you know, clearly it's a different role, but, you know, what's translated, I guess, for you in your role? Yeah,
you know, there are honestly a lot of similarities between kind of what I do day to day today and then the stuff that I did day to day at a big CPG company. You know, if I was to list a couple, the first one for me, I spent a lot of time working on innovation when I was at kind of big CPG. And I think the skill set that you learn there is how to be really focused on consumers. What problems do they have? What gaps do they see in the category? What gaps do they see in the marketplace? And really building products around that. And so, you know, as we started to build the offering for beans, if, you know, for example, it was clear to me like, okay, dry beans are annoying to cook. They take an hour. Right. So let's come up with something faster. Or people aren't always comfortable cooking international cuisine because it can be intimidating to them. Right. It's different spices, different seasonings, sometimes more complex. So let's have it be fully cooked and seasoned and remove that pain point. Right. And I could go down the list, but I would say like that was a skill set that I learned at big CPG was how do you take a flaw or a gap in the marketplace and turn it into a product design principle? So that'll be, you know, number one thing. And then the second thing I would say is just kind of managing a really diverse team. You know, so when you're working at a big CPG company, you know, one meeting might be focused on finance, the next is focused on supply chain, then marketing, then sales, there's some internal HR thing, some culture building, right? Like your days are very varied, and that's very much the case today, right? Like, you know, if you look at my calendar, I'm jumping between kind of functional areas of thought and different parts of the team. And so that's felt like a very natural transition.
Is there a specific function you enjoy the most?
You know, at heart, I'm a marketer. That's how I think of myself, right? And so I enjoy marketing in the true sense of like the four P's, right? So product, price, promotion, place, you know, things related to creating a product and bringing it to market and then sharing it with consumers is probably the area that I get the most excitement from. But I've grown into enjoying, you know, everything to different degrees, you know?
Awesome. Awesome. Fun times, even accounting and finance.
Even accounting and finance, man. If you think about it strategically, financing maybe more than the nitty gritty accounting, but like if you think about it strategically, there's cool choices to make and decisions to make there as well.
Definitely, definitely. All right. Well, let's get into the kind of the sales side of things. So, sales channels in terms of like where you sell, or even kind of your footprint or plan, strategic plan from 2019 through today. Clearly, COVID impacted everything greatly, everybody greatly, but even before that, like, how did you kind of, you know, I in our conversations in the past, you're a very methodical person. So I'm sure this was thought out in the process, and kind of walk through kind of what your mindset was when you started building and innovating the brand before you even went to market, and what was your go-to-market approach?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. I do try to think methodically, so I'm glad that that's yes. kind of across in some of our conversations. You know, we launched the business initially online. So the first 6 months of the business, we were just on Amazon. And the whole idea there was just we wanted to find a quick way to go to market with a ton of flexibility, right? So the cool thing about Amazon, you know, particularly if you're on like the seller platform, is that you control your pricing, you control your configurations, you control when you're in stock, out of stock. And so as a totally new brand, that was just a great place for us to start because we had that flexibility to figure things out. From there, we then entered into the natural channel. So we launched nationally at Whole Foods and many, you know, many independents and small chains from there. But the natural channel then was a good place for us because that was the consumer that I felt like would most quickly and immediately understand the value of what we were doing, right? So you think about high quality ingredients, really strong, you know, solid premium to the competition, but baked into like quality. I felt like you'd find people in the natural channel who were willing to pay for it and kind of understood the journey. And then, you know, from there, I would say we've taken strategic bets in basically every other channel, right? So conventional grocery, launched in Publix. Florida has been a great market for us in terms of just overall velocity of our beans. And so that's made sense. We launched into mass, so Target and Walmart on the West Coast. Again, that's kind of our home territory. We're very well developed here, so it felt like a good place to try. And then club, we launched into club in SoCal, a test. And so, you know, I think a lot of those conventional retailers were still very much in like learning mode with them. But that's been the approach, kind of start from the core, people who we know will get what we're doing, and then just be really smart about how we expand outside of that.
Do you have a favorite in terms of a favorite sales channel for any reason whatsoever?
I love them all. I really do. You know what I mean? And for different reasons, right? I love club because you have the ability to have this huge palette footprint and introduce a new product to the world very quickly, right? And you know, different than a supermarket where you're competing with thousands of other brands, right? So that's the reason I love club. But at the same time, I love the natural channel because the consumers there are really in a discovery mindset, right? They walk through the aisle. And again, this is more pre-COVID than maybe post-COVID, but it's also a really cool environment for people to find new brands, to discover things that they otherwise wouldn't. And then e-commerce, of course, is great because we get to create this one-on-one relationship with our customers, right? And we launched a true D2C channel probably later than many brands. We just launched this year. Or rather late 2020, but that channel is quickly becoming one of my favorites as well because we just get such good data in terms of like being able to email folks and introduce new things. So there's a long answer to your question, but there's reasons to love all the different channels we sell in.
Yeah, it's interesting because each channel has their own kind of complexities, their own different metrics or KPIs you have to review, the different strategies, different people you're interacting with directly, different data you're reviewing. Like, how do you, from just kind of overall kind of KPI review within each kind of specific sales channel, like how often are you reviewing metrics, whether it's sales or margins or whatever, kind of within, you know, the specific, you know, sales channel?
Yeah, you know, from our perspective, probably on like a monthly cadence. And, you know, I'll be honest and say, I think, although you're correct, that there's a lot of different nuance to each channel, the core KPI is pretty much the same, which is some measurement of velocity, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think there's a lot of things baked into that, right? And so it's like, is your pricing correct? Are you offering a unique product or a unique benefit? Are you doing it better than the competition, right? Do you are you in the right place on shelf? Do you have good merchandising in store, right? So there's a lot of things that of course bake into it, but at the end of the day, the key thing we're paying attention to is how's our velocity? How does that compare to our competition? And how's that growing month over month? That's the thing I probably keep the closest eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. In terms of maybe some, I guess, kind of as you've grown your business, now you're in multiple sales channels, six, seven, eight of them, where you started out with one, right? Within what, a 24 month time frame, right? Like, yeah. How have you managed that overall time around across each of those sales channels in terms of managing them, selling, advertise, like, you know, multiple team members, you know, like what has been your strategy or your approach related to just overall kind of channel management, time management, and to ensure that you're properly focusing within each, you know, channel appropriately?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, first and foremost, I think for us has been to bite off the right size bite, if that makes sense, right? So like we didn't launch into 4,000 Walmarts, right? We launched into 250 Walmarts and we didn't launch into every DC in the country. We launched into a cluster of DCs on the West Coast, right? And so the first thing I would say for us has just been being appropriately focused and prioritizing the biggest opportunities within each channel, right? So we're not just running in and trying to get every door we can. We're trying to be really thoughtful about where do we think we'll perform the best? What can we manage internally to do that? And then so that would be the first thing I would say. And then the second thing, which, you know, candidly, we're on the learning journey for is just the right team members to support that, right? So, you know, when you and I started working together, it was just me, right? I was the only full-time employee here. Over that time, we've added tons of freelancers, agencies, then that evolved into part-time employees. Now that's evolving into full-time employees. And so that's something I think for any fast-growing business, it's really like a quarterly cadence, right? Of like, do we have the right people to support the things that we're taking on? You know, we brought on to this question in particular, national sales director who started last month, a woman by the name of Amber, who's, you know, she's done a great job. And it's amazing just to even see her now be able to dedicate her full attention to sales, whereas for me, it was maybe 20% of my time, right? And so, or maybe more than that, but still never 100%. And so that's what I would say, is just like really being thoughtful about building the team, but being prioritized along the way.
Yeah, I think, again, methodical approach, right? Bite off a little bit, keep adding, expanding, right? Hire slow, and kind of make sure you have a team in place, but then once you're ready to roll, get rolling. So I'm excited to see where you're going to head in the future with kind of a full-time salesperson, you know, focus of where you've been, you know, the last couple of years. How has COVID changed your team approach and or sales kind of approach?
Yeah, COVID has been interesting for us because number one, I have to always start by just being thankful that like we've been on the positive side of things largely in that we're a food brand, pantry friendly, simple meals, right? Like we're on trend for a lot of the things that people have been seeking during COVID. So our velocities, you know, online and in the natural channel have been really strong. The flip side of COVID for us has been, you know, a lot of our planned growth, you know, last year was really to come through new distribution and into new conventional retail where, you know, a lot of those retailers just aren't looking or weren't looking last year to reset their categories or add new brands. They were really focused on staying in stock with their biggest and strongest performing items. And so You know, it's been a little bit of a double-edged sword, but I would say all in all, I feel really happy about it because I think it's forced us to be stronger online and digitally, where we might not have ever gotten to the place where we're at right now had it not been for that shock to the system, right? So that's been a positive. And now I think, you know, as retailers start to reevaluate or revisit their innovation and category review schedules, I think we'll be well positioned to jump right back into that mix and grow some of the distribution that we were planning. So overall, I'll say COVID's been a benefit and it really forced us to think right digitally.
Yeah, and I think the consumer kind of model of online purchasing is not going to go away ever, right? I think it forced a lot of people to do that. And so getting into that space is, you know, I see a ton of brands that are doing that or did that even when they weren't planning on it, because you just had to, because that's where the consumers were for the time period. But good. Moving on from just kind of an overall inventory perspective, like just kind of, you know, high level, nothing in detail here. Like how do you view inventory? Like if you view inventory, like at a warehouse or on hand that you purchase, like how do you view that? Like just from an overall kind of high level standpoint, like, you know, like in what kind of like, what goes through your mind with having inventory on hand and managing your business, for growth in terms of what you're doing?
Yeah. So, you know, really, really high level, obviously inventory is super important for a business like ours, because any out of stock, any late shipment, any, any missed order that's, you know, that's lost sales in the short term, but also it dings away at your credibility and your ability to grow, right? So when a retailer or a customer or even a consumer at home, you know, they visit your Amazon page and it's like, man, okay, I visited 3 times and this stuff is always out of stock. Like at some point they're not coming back to look again, right? And so first and foremost for me, it's just important to be in stock and available when people want us, right? And so I think about it as an important responsibility. The flip side of that, of course, is like, you got to manage it, because it can also be a source of a lot of, it is a source of like working capital drain in general, right? A lot of our cash goes towards production and inventory. But if you're not careful, then you're starting to deal with like spoilage, markdowns, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, at a really high level, we're just trying to stay in that sweet spot where, look, we're able to fulfill every order, right? But we're not sitting on a ton of excess inventory. And we stay close to it. You know, I look at inventory and orders every week, right? To make sure that we're staying in the right balance.
Yep, it's that sweet spot between outlaying too much cash and having too much inventory in hand to not having any out of stock. So it's a just interesting kind of game when you have inventory. In terms of, you know, just, you know, you're selling 6 different flavors. Did you start, how many SKUs did you start with, or how many flavors did you start with?
We started with 3, and we've added incrementally. I think we added 2 last year and then one more this year.
Gotcha. Awesome. Awesome. Any big plans in the near future, anything different?
We have some innovation coming, nothing that I'll disclose in full detail, but you know, my vision for the brand has always been that we get to a point where people could assemble an entire meal using our products. Right. And so beans has always been for me, just the starting point. And you know, we'll continue to work our way around the dinner plate, and, you know, into other categories and things that can be in alongside the beans. So we have our first new, like true new category launching probably in about 3 months, and we'll see where it lands.
Awesome, man. Love kind of your methodical approach again to number of SKUs and things like that. I think from my perspective of what I see with various clients or, you know, folks that I interface with, of again, like, you know, keeping it simple to start off and not biting off too much and not running before you walk and things like that. I think getting in there in the space and figuring out some wins and some losses kind of helps, you know, somebody moving forward. And I think slow progress, you know, makes a lot of sense and from everybody's capacity or standpoint. Kind of as we close out here, just kind of for the fellow emerging CPG brand listeners here, like what is, can you give me like one do for them to kind of think about moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I this is going to sound cheesy, but like I go back to, they used to tell us this in business school. I'm sure other schools do the same thing of like, to remember your admissions essay, right? with the idea being like, there was something you intended to do when you started, or when, you know, when you got to business school, or when you launched this company. And it's very easy to lose track of that, right? Because there's so much noise, there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of just people in the industry giving sometimes well-meaning feedback, sometimes not well-intentioned feedback, but like you can get pulled in a lot of different directions. And it's just important to remember like, okay, what was your vision? What was your mission with this brand? And are you delivering against it? Are there other ways that you can deliver against it better? But just kind of staying focused. And it's something I have to remind myself often, you know, just get regrounded on, okay, what's the purpose of A Dozen Cousins? Why did I launch this brand? Is this aligned with that? Does this feel off? And, you know, that same piece of advice I give other founders as well.
I love that. I love that. You know, a lot of times it'll be focused on some more tangible things in terms of numbers or, you know, metrics to review, but kind of going back to that original mission statement or vision statement and kind of just making sure to see where you set in relation to that is a good thing. And I know that as a fellow entrepreneur, like sometimes you're like, wait, what's going on or what am I doing? And why are we doing this specific service or this specific SKU or specific flavor? And, you know, does it really meet with what you're trying to do? All right. And then one don't.
Don't. Don't get caught up thinking about risk in like the like gunslinger way. You know what I mean? Of like that you're either all in, you know, shooting for the stars, or that you're being conservative or boring, right? Like again, there's balance in that. You know, what I'm always looking for is disproportionate risk, right? Where the upside is really high and the downside is manageable. And I take those risks all the time, right? And like if it's a risk where the downside is just as big as the upside, well, you know, sometimes I pass on those, you know what I mean? Or vice versa, where it's not that much upside, but if it goes wrong, it could go really wrong, right? Like you just got to think about risk in a nuanced way. So I don't know if that falls into a do or a don't, but hopefully the message is there around just being thoughtful about the risk that you're taking as an entrepreneur. Because at the end of the day, if you create some value, you don't want to squander it because of like a silly decision or unnecessary risk that you've taken.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. I think, you know, the overall is don't take a risk without analyzing the upside and downside, right?
And that's a better way of putting it. I like that. That's
and what is the gap between the two, right? Is it this or is it this? And how does it relate to kind of that equilibrium number or the equilibrium line? So, well, good. Well, I never actually knew Ibrahim in terms of where the brand name A Dozen Cousins came from. So I learned something today, plus some other great advice. You know, for all the listeners out there, A Dozen Cousins, adozencousins.com. Is there any other kind of marketing or a sales speaker that you want to tell the folks out in the world that they want to come and check out your product?
Visit the website. You can buy the product, learn more about the brand, get linked out to our social media. I think that's the right place to start. So thank you again for taking the time and for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks again, Ibrahim. Again, this is Ibrahim Basir from A Dozen Cousins, episode 9 of the month end. Thanks for listening.